This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Libby Trickett is one of Australia's most successful swimmers ever. She has won gold at three different Olympic Games in 2004, 2008 and 2012. She was a world record holder for the 100-metre freestyle. But beneath the surface, she was also dealing with crippling anxiety and depression. In her new book, Beneath the Surface, she opens up about her private struggle to overcome some of her mental health issues. And I understand a very pregnant Libby Trickett joins me now from Queensland. Is that right, Libby?
Correct, yes. I am very well pregnant at this point.
Okay.
I'll be here in a few weeks, I think.
Okay. So you're feeling okay?
I have been. It's been a very different pregnancy to what I've experienced with my two previous pregnancies with my girls. But I have to be honest, though. I have definitely reached the point where I'm very excited to see the end of it and to meet our new baby.
You're saying you just want to get that baby out.
Totally.
I know that feeling. Especially with the third one. It was like, no, I just want to get you out now.
Totally. And, yeah, just start recovering and to, you know, meet the new baby, obviously, but definitely start recovering as well.
Yeah. You've written this book, Beneath the Surface, and obviously as an elite athlete, you're very used to, you know, living your life in front of the cameras and the media. But was it still a little bit difficult to open up about a part of your life that was so personal?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're on, you know, it, or in the media, in television, radio, whatever it might be, newspapers, as an athlete, you wear a form of armour because you're trying to achieve something. You're really only talking about one specific thing in your life and how you're trying to achieve that. And, you know, it's something that I really loved. It's something that I was super passionate about. So I quite enjoyed talking about my swimming. When it comes to the idea of writing a book, one that, you know, it's going to be warts and all, essentially, and maybe not everybody understands what your experiences are. And, you know, you kind of open yourself up to be very vulnerable and judged and taken out of context, potentially. That was definitely very scary for me, something that was quite daunting in a lot of ways. But it's something that I'm so glad that I sort of did, and it's something that I'm really proud of as well.
Oh, that's good. So let's just start with a little bit of a chat about swimming, because after all, that is what you're best known for. So I know you were swimming from a very young age, but when did you realise that this might be much more than just a hobby?
Well, I mean, I learnt to swim when I was one, and I joined my first club when I was four. And I think from the moment that I did my very first club night race, I absolutely fell in love with swimming and racing and competing. That was something that really resonated with me and connected me to the pool, I think, probably until now, until I'm, you know, 34.
Yeah.
But I think the point where I realized that potentially I had the possibility of making maybe the Australian team or potentially going to an Olympics was probably when I was about 17.
Mm-hmm.
So fairly late in the
piece. It's fairly late, yeah.
Yeah, certainly that was the moment. I made my first Australian youth team that year, and I kind of realised that if I put myself into it and really dedicated myself and sort of took the risk and the plunge, I guess, that I would actually potentially make an Australian team, and that really just made me very excited.
Yeah. I mean, that was also around the time that you met your husband Luke, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was at that youth team that I actually met Luke, which was really, fortuitous in a lot of ways.
It's kind of amazing that you didn't sort of get distracted, really, because you're sort of right about just how attractive he was, really, when you first met him.
Look, I mean, young, strapping swimmers for me was just amazing to be around, and they can be very distracting, certainly, but I was lucky enough to sort of lock one in early on. So that was very exciting.
Well, since most of us will never know the joy of winning an Olympic gold or maybe even winning anything, can you tell us a little bit about how it feels to achieve your Olympic dream? I mean, especially the first time, that must have just been amazing.
I mean, I've been privileged and lucky enough to win four Olympic gold medals, and they're all so incredibly special in lots of different ways. The best way that I can describe it is every 4 years you have, for me it was 56 seconds to win an Olympic gold medal. So every 4 years you get this one tiny sliver of time to achieve your lifetime dream and to, you know, touch the wall and turn around and see the number one next to your name is something that is quite hard to describe. I think the biggest emotion I felt was relief at that particular time, because you have such a short, minimal amount of time to actually achieve that. But, yeah, I was incredibly proud and incredibly excited, and I'm so grateful that I was able to put it together on that day. But, you know, with the relays, I mean, that's something that gets to stay with you forever, to be able to share that moment with the three other amazing, incredible Australian women who are still some of my, you know, closest friends today. You know, something that I'm, yeah, very, very proud of and very grateful for.
Yeah, that is very special. I'm speaking with Livvy Trickett, one of Australia's most successful swimmers ever. Her new book, Beneath the Surface, is a memoir about her swimming career and some of her mental health challenges. Now, let's talk about your retirement, Livvy, because in 2013, your retirement came as a bit of a shock to you. Even though you'd swum at three Olympics, you really had the dream to make it four. So can you tell us a bit about that time?
Yeah, so I had already retired from the sport and decided to come back after a period of depression, and I just felt like I needed to get back into my comfort zone in a lot of ways, and swimming was that for me. It was understanding, you know, the process and what I wanted to achieve, and having a goal that I could really sink my teeth into, which was going to my third Olympics in London 2012. And I was really lucky that that all kind of came together, but I didn't want to waste that comeback. I didn't want to waste that time and energy that I'd spent getting fit again. And so I had the new dream and the new goal of going to a fourth Olympics, which was the 2016 Rio Games. But sometimes I think life kind of works in mysterious ways, and the universe kind of takes you in the path and the direction that they actually want you to go in. And, yeah, very quickly after coming back from London, I injured my wrist just during training, kind of regular training, and it just my scapholunate tore straight through in my wrist. And, yeah, it was really unexpected, and I thought it would just require a few months rehabilitation. It required a full wrist reconstruction, so I, you know, was under no impression that it would be an easy recovery, but I certainly thought it was a possibility. But within, you know, 6 months, I think, of having the surgery, I realised that this was going to be incredibly difficult to come back from. You know, I was 27 at the time. I'd already had a year out of the water with my previous retirement. A couple of swimmers by the name of Kate and Bronte Campbell were coming through and doing pretty well. And so I had to really assess the situation and understand whether this was the prompt to sort of move into retirement permanently.
Yeah. And how was that? I mean, you sort of share a lot of that in your book about how it felt, but how much of your sense of self was tied up with being an elite athlete?
Oh, a huge amount. And, you know, at the time I was very much, you know, I'm not just Livvy Trickett the swimmer. I'm Livvy who's, you know, doing a bit of study. I'm, you know, I'm a wife, a sister, daughter, friend kind of thing. There's lots more to me than just swimming, but you kind of value yourself in a certain way when you're an athlete, and that's through performance and through feedback, through training and working towards a tangible black and white goal. And when you move into the real world, it's so grey, you know, it's so grey, the goals that you can set, it's so grey in terms of the actual direction and way of achieving those goals. It makes it really difficult to sort of navigate that, let alone being taken out of that support structure. You're no longer spending time with those people that you spent a decade with training every single day. So it makes it really challenging to sort of navigate that path. And, you know, also you go from being one of the best in the world in your field to being just like everyone else, which, you know, is a nice thing. It's quite humbling and grounding in a lot of ways, but it's also quite confronting for your ego when you are very average at what most people find easy. So,
okay. So what would you say was the hardest part of, like, adjusting to life after sport? It sounds like there were multiple challenges, but if you look back on it now, you know, what would you have done differently?
Well, a couple of things. I would have detrained because this is only a concept that I kind of have discovered quite recently, to be honest. I would have scaled down my training rather than immediately stopped. My situation was slightly different because I was injured. But I probably would have tried to detrain more, because I think when you go from doing 35 hours a week of training to nothing, that really messes with a lot of hormones and happy hormones and those, you know, serotonin and endorphins and dopamine releases that you get through exercise. So that's quite confronting in of itself. But I think one of the things that I found most challenging was just scheduling my own time. When you're an athlete, your time is kind of not your own. You're scheduled. You know what you're doing and when you're doing, and you're told how to do it, basically. And you do that to the best of your ability. And when you're having to make those decisions yourself, it's quite overwhelming and confronting in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And one of your toughest times was after you had your daughter Poppy. I mean, no, it took a little while to get her. And when you did, you suffered from really quite an intense postnatal depression. You know, what was that like, and how did you come out of that period?
Yeah, well, I think the transition into motherhood is incredibly confronting for most women in some way. I mean, sometimes it might be a bit easier, or, you know, sometimes women find the difficult transition going from one to two. It just depends. But for me, going from no children to one was really quite confronting, because you're not in control anymore. You're taking care of this little being who requires complete dependence on you, and that's really kind of scary in of itself. But I think the biggest challenge I found in and I think the reason that sort of I went spiraling into postnatal depression was the sleep deprivation. And nothing can really prepare you for how hard that can be. And Poppy, although she was okay for the first sort of 4 months, she went into a place of waking every 45 minutes overnight for a period of about 5 months. And I think I looked at, you know, I was incredibly self-critical and harsh on myself, because I was like, every woman around the world does this and somehow they're all coping and I'm not. And if I just loved her enough, or if I was enough for her, then she would sleep. That was the sort of mentality that I had. But it was really difficult. It was an incredibly, I found incredibly sad time, because I just couldn't enjoy her at all. I was incredibly bitter and resentful of what I felt like she was putting me through. The reality was she wasn't sleeping either, so she was tired as, and you know, was really struggling to cope with that lack of sleep as well. So that was really a really difficult time. And you know, with the book, like, that's the main thing that I wanted to sort of get out of it, and hopefully people resonate with, is that they're not alone during those challenges. There are so many women around the world who struggle with that, and you're not failing. You're not a crap parent in any way, shape or form. You just have to ask the right people for help, and that's the most important thing during that time. And it's okay to ask for help. You haven't failed. You're not weak in any way, shape or form. It's really important to seek that assistance when you need it.
Yeah. I mean, that is right there is a very good point, just about not being scared to ask for help. But what have you also learned about how to actually take care of your mental health, Libby?
Yeah, so, well, through that experience, well, to be honest, to be fair, to the experience that I had through my first experience of depression when I retired from swimming for the first time, I realized that I needed to have sort of essentially a mental health checklist, and it wasn't anything formal at that time, but through the, particularly through the experience with Poppy and the postnatal depression, I've kind of formalized it in my head of what my main things that I need to make sure that I'm taking care of my mental health, because I think a lot of the time we get reactive around our mental health rather than being proactive. Mm. So for me, exercise is one of those incredible foundations for me. I, you know, as best as I can, being a mum to two young girls and, you know, still working and that third one on the way, I try and exercise 3 times a week, ideally. You know, I hope for a time that it can be a little bit more, but yes, 3 times a week is kind of, I think, non-negotiable for me. Sleep is incredibly important. I've discovered through chronic sleep deprivation that sleep is really important. And then making sure that you're connecting with people. So whether that's friends or family, seeing a counsellor or a psychologist, someone that you trust and feel comfortable with, and also having a great GP. I think we don't put enough importance on finding a great GP, but for me that was like the most important first step in getting help for me.
Okay. Now, if you could, you know, go back in time and just have a word to your younger self, what would you want to whisper into Libby Trickett's ear?
It'd probably be the same as what I would tell myself now, to be honest, but that everything will be okay. I think when you're going through really difficult times, it's hard to see that it will be okay again. But through everything that I've gone through and all of the experiences that I've had, as hard and as dark as it can get, you do become okay again. And, you know, ultimately, whatever happens, it happens for a reason, and you can't necessarily know or see why it's happening that way. But it allows you to learn and grow and evolve into something even better than you were before.
Mm, yeah. I mean, another thing before I let you go that we see a lot of in this book, which I imagine would have been quite hard for you to do, was just the way that you shared so openly about your relationship with your husband, Luke, and all the ups and downs that you have been through over the years, knowing each other since you were 17. Mm. You know, and it's a real tribute, I think, to your relationship, even though it's not without its difficulties, obviously.
Yeah.
What have you learnt about marriage and how to stick together as a family?
Yeah, thank you for that. It was, you know, it hasn't always been easy. And I think a lot of the times the best relationships aren't always easy, but you grow together. You are able to compromise if you need to compromise. You are able to work as a team. And for me, I think that real sense of being a team with Luke in this world is something that I'm so incredibly grateful for. He can be a total jerk. You know, he can be incredibly selfish at times and incredibly frustrating in lots of different ways, as I'm sure I am to him as well.
Oh, no, I'm sure you're perfect, Libby. I don't think you've ever been selfish.
Of course. But that's, the reality is that any good relationship takes hard work. And I think sometimes, you know, whether it's social media or whatever it is, you see these people who are living these amazing lives, and that's not the reality of life every single day, especially when you've got work and kids and mortgages and financial responsibilities and aging parents and all of these different challenges that we are all facing every single day. We have to actively choose to come together and work together and be that team. And that's something that Luke and I are really on the same page with what we've experienced with, you know, separating after we got married and making that conscious decision to work together, not only as a team and, you know, in as a family, but as a couple as well. And, you know, we were individuals before we were a couple, but we were a couple before we were parents as well. And we need to make sure that we capture that joy and love as much as we can and also work together as a team.
Yeah. Well, good on you. It is a tough time. It's a tough time for relationships, as you mentioned, with young children and aging parents and all the challenges that life's thrown at you. But, yeah, it's really helpful, I think, that you've been able to share all that aspect of your life as well, because, you know, it doesn't make sense if you're not seeing the full picture. So, yeah, thank you so much for your book and for sharing, you know, all the struggles that you've had and all the amazing successes too.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that is Libby Trickett. Her new book, Beneath the Surface, is a memoir about her swimming career and her mental health challenges.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.